FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today is April 26th, 2018. Well, market going higher. Is the party finally over on Wall Street? What about interest rates? 10-year over 3%. Is that cause for alarm or just a blip on the screen? And what about gold and silver? Before we get started, as always, I really enjoy getting your emails. I love to see them in my inbox in the morning. So email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. Well, Rick Ackerman is with us now. Rick, welcome back.
Kerry, thanks for inviting me on. Always a pleasure to get with you.
Likewise. So, market, you made some interesting observations about Amazon. I mean, it used to be what's good for GM is good for the country, good for the economy. Is it now what's good for Amazon is good for the economy, or are we in something else that's different that we don't really quite understand?
Well, I think Amazon is the only stock you have to watch to get a handle on the economy. And you can see that it's finally struggling, as it should. You know, the stock is priced at something like 248 times trailing earnings, and it's got a lot to live up to at that kind of valuation. So,
it seems like it.
The stock. I think the stock covers a much wider swath of the economy than GM ever did. You know, Amazon is a true, I think it's a global bellwether. And even though the paradox is that it's this online stock, Amazon winds up being a huge, huge brick and mortar business because they're always enhancing their shipping capabilities by building warehouses, which I think there are more than 90 in the U.S., pretty good size warehouses. And of course, in other places in the world. And they're so big that they can get the U.S. Postal Service to make deliveries on Sundays.
Yeah.
And of course, we know they're big in a way of satisfying consumer demand, because pretty much anything you or I might want to buy is just, it's there on Amazon. The price is good. They get it to you quickly. So I think it's a great stock, and much more so than the old saying, as GM goes, so goes the nation. I think it's true in spades for Amazon. So I don't see things turning bad for Amazon until we go into a recession. And that means the problem there is going to be that Amazon has such a huge hold on retail goods in this country that when people are less able to buy, when consumers are flat on their backs, they're going to come out with pitchforks and say that the government should regulate Amazon because Amazon controls all prices. So I think if you can imagine that story getting legs, being the sort of thing we read about above the fold in the newspapers each day, it's not impossible to envision Amazon falling from 1400, 1500, where it's traded recently, down to, let's say, 200, because you know, things always go to extremes, and having Amazon coming down is going to overshoot any downside target we could possibly have in mind for it. But just keep in mind that no stock goes up forever, and that there is that dark shadow looming over Amazon in the event of an economic downturn. So, you know, to put it in technical perspective, I put out something a week or so ago on Amazon that said that if the stock didn't clear a couple of prior peaks on the daily chart during earnings week, which earnings are due out this afternoon after the close, then the bear market in stocks was over. And I think it's really that simple. Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost like the groundhog seeing his shadow or not. So what happened was Amazon got slammed so hard in advance of this earnings news that's coming out today, that even though it's in a pretty good short squeeze today, it's never going to get above those two prior peaks. So I think that the price action in Amazon is telling us that the U.S. economy and the stock market may have peaked for a long time.
Really? Well, you knew the day was going to come. We've been talking about it for years, Rick. Is there any surprise here, really?
The surprise is just how long the boys managed to sustain the illusion. And, of course, the Federal Reserve, through a very loose credit policy, has given us a boom in the stock market and a boom in real estate, but they're no solider than the booms that occurred prior to the 2007-2008 crash. So I think real estate is really setting up for a big fall here. And even though technically I don't see it in the stock market, you know, I put out a target for the Dow around 22,000, but that would be my worst case, at least for the time being. But for all we know, it could be the first shot, you know, a shot across the bow, and that the Dow will eventually sink much lower. But the first really big downdraft, which we've been in, projects no further than 22,000 and change.
Mm-hmm. So not that steep a decline, you know, 15-20% decline. That's normal for a correction. What would it take for the market to turn around and watch this thing go higher?
Well, maybe quantitative easing. You know, I mean, the Fed's been so dedicated to this phony story about, well, we're going to tighten three more times this year. But of course, the Fed isn't watching the economy or inflation, or they don't really care. What they care about is the stock market. And the way the stock market, based on the weakness we've had, which if it were to compound over the next few weeks, I don't think the Fed's going to stick with its story about tightening three more times this year. It may be a while for them to face the music that what the economy really needs is loosening. But of course, that would alter their grand strategy of pushing rates up high enough so that they can bring them down in the next recession.
Mm-hmm. So you think that, so you think we're headed for a recession then, huh?
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. I do. It's all out there. And I think, well, you know, the earnings that we were going to get for Q1 stood to be the best since 2010. And the earnings have looked pretty good, but you just wonder how much better they're going to get going into an environment where we've got rates on a 10-year note above 3%, or they're just about there. And, you know, I've had a forecast of 3.11 on the 10-year note going back to December, when the rate was about 2.35%. It looked like a huge move to me. And at the time that I saw it technically, I couldn't fathom how the economy was going to survive such a huge increase in rates. But it has so far. But of course, it's not we can't really do a static analysis right there. The economy may be shifting dynamically now from boom to incipient recession. And that's where I think we are.
Yeah. So what's going to be the reaction if we wind up hitting this recession? What are they going to do?
Well, it's not going to be your grandmother's or even your father's recession. There's so many things that are at extremes that we're not the soft landing. You can forget about it's just not possible. And of course, but the market has bucked the Fed for some time. The Fed has been ostensibly tightening for more than 2 years. And we had a bull that arguably was there in spades until early February. So it's going to go hard. I mean, the housing collapse in particular is going to, well, it's hard to suggest that, it's maybe far-fetched to suggest that it's going to make 2007-8 look like a picnic. But the fact is, you've got so many baby boomers now who are looking to downsize, and there are no conceivable buyers for those homes. You know, it's only recently that the first time buyer market perked up a little bit, but we shouldn't kid ourselves about the ability of millennials to move into the homes of the baby boomers. And they're going to be hard pressed enough to pay whatever they borrowed to get useless college degrees.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be paying off their degrees in sociology and art history, but they're also going to be footing the bills for the baby boomers, Medicare and Social Security. And I think that burden alone is a crushing burden. I don't think that the millennials or Gen Xers are ever going to get out from underneath that load.
Huh. Pretty bleak, isn't it? Well, 10,000 baby boomers retiring every day, supposedly. I don't know where they find all these. I didn't know that many of them were working, but a lot of them aren't able to retire. I think that 10,000 a day is not exactly right. I think there's more to the story than that. But certainly there are issues, and baby boomers are undersaved, so they're going to be working longer than they ever intended to, right? Don't you agree?
And what is the not too much talked about consequence of that? If baby boomers are working into their, and we are, I know, because I'm one of them, I'm working way beyond what the actuary expected of me. And what that means is, not in my case in particular, but the baby boomers staying with their jobs because they can't afford to retire means that those jobs will not be opening up for millennials. And it's worse than that, because we're at a time when so many jobs are being displaced by robots. So you know, the demographic, I don't think you have to go too much deeper to see where we're headed than the very simple question: do you actually believe that these millennials who are, they've been living with their parents till they're 30, they've got $50,000 to $100,000 or more of college debt, they're for the most part unable to buy their first homes, do you honestly think that they will be able to pay for the baby boomers' Social Security and Medicare? And I think that's as simple a way as I can put it, because there's just no, I don't think I'm going to find a very good argument against it.
Yeah, well, you know, you're probably correct. The trend is your friend, but the trend can also be your enemy. So what do you do? How do you prepare for this, Rick? How do you make sure?
Well, every time on the 25th of the month when my Social Security check hits my account, I smack my lips and thank good, another check in the till.
The Ponzi goes on. The Ponzi continues.
I know that it can't continue forever or even for long, but I'm enjoying the benefits of Social Security and for sure Medicare while the getting's good.
Yeah, well, they're going to have to come up with something here. I mean, look.
Well, you say they. Who is they, first of all?
And them.
What is that something?
The same ones that shot Kennedy, them. they shot Kennedy, right?
Put they in the context that I think you meant. They have been pretty successful in with quantitative easing in causing the stock market and real estate assets to rise. Mm-hmm. However, one of the things that we're going to be dealing with in the next downturn will be a collapse of the public pension system. Not that the private system is in much better shape, but in the public system, we can see the inevitability of a bankruptcy. The first state, I think, that's going to wave the red flag will be Illinois. But Illinois is just one of the dominoes. You know, California is in horrible shape. Governor Christie, even, you know, 8 years ago, was calling attention to the fact he went to war with the teachers because he said, look, you know, New Jersey simply can't afford to be paying these amazing benefits to teachers who retired 55 and the rest of the New Jerseyans are working till they're 70 to pay pensions and health care plans for public employees. So this is going to happen all over the country. And whereas the Fed is just terrific at pumping up the stock market with a lot of funny money, you can't pump up a bankrupt pension system because it involves sending out real checks for real money to real people so that they can pay for real services. It's not the same as inflating the stock market. So as soon as anybody gets wind, if some imbecile up on Capitol Hill should get the brilliant idea, hey, you know, we're going to bail out Illinois, we're on a slippery slope then to, even though I've never been a buyer of the idea, you know, we're on the slippery slope to hyperinflation. because once the federal government starts assuming liability for failed state pension plans and prints checks, they're going to be able to do that for maybe 1 or 2 months before people realize that the sums involved are the kind of numbers that produce a hyperinflation. So mm-hmm. So the problems in the next downturn are going to be real. It's not going to be the good old, you know, it's so easy to pump the stock market and get real estate heated. We're going to be dealing with real money problems with the problem of inflating a system where checks go out every month to pay for real services.
So what about precious metals as a hedge against all this?
I don't see them going anywhere. Deflation in itself implies a strengthening dollar. So gold will have some headwinds. I've always felt that gold would do relatively well as an asset class come hell or high water. And hell or high water means whether we hyperinflate or deflate. So I think gold is always going to hold its purchasing power, relatively speaking, but I don't see a monster bull market for gold. You know, I would say
in the near future, huh?
It's been in a bear market since 2011, but of course that bear market is correcting an even larger move from the high 200s per ounce up to a high in 2011 of $1,900 an ounce. So I would say that has been. And this is scant consolation to people who have sat with gold all these years. But I would say the weakness in gold in bullion has been constructive. It looks more like a consolidation to me, albeit a brutal and really long consolidation, than it does a distribution.
Brutal for sure. Very long. I mean, it's almost a decade now. We're looking at, well, not almost a decade. It's 7 years. 7 year decline. The peak was in 6.5 years. Peak was September of 2011. And silver's was right around there. And well, you never know. Like no one was expecting it to go up during the 2000s.
If you want to like gold, I would suggest putting up the monthly chart, because it's very likable there. If you're trading, you know, the daily or the intraday charts, mm-hmm. you could really be hating gold by now. But over the last couple of years, we've rallied off a low of about, I think it was 1,046 back in early 2016. And that looks like the beginning of a second big leg in gold that could take it as high, trading currently 1314 basis the July continuous contract, but I've got a 2278 target there. So that's not more than $900 rally in gold, and we've just made, let's say, very preliminary signs. We've tripped a theoretical buy at 1354. But the first time that happened was 2 years ago, or more than a year and a half ago, and it's been tentatively probing that trigger point ever since without breaking through it. But once it does, once we see 2 monthly closing bars above 1354 basis July, I would give you a minimum upside projection from there to 1662. And that's going to be a very key price. If we get through it, if gold blows through it, then yes, that 2278 target that I gave you earlier is good. And of course, that's a far cry from some of the target numbers that Super Bulls have given out. You know, people talking about gold at $5,000 an ounce, and that's where the fireworks will begin. But for me, the very, very best I could see would be 2278. And we're still in that period of pain where if you're waiting for it to happen week to week, it's just it's a lot of painful tedium.
Yeah, it's like watching paint dry, Rick. You know, it's just like watching paint dry. So yeah. What do we do here? What is a investor to do? If you're not a trader, what is it you got to do here to make life tolerable and to get the biggest bang out of your buck?
You've got to buy what everybody else is avoiding. And that means long-term treasuries. You know, they've done pretty well most of the last 38 years. But of course, if you've been with them, you've stuck with long bonds, anything 10-year maturity or more, you've had a rough time. But I think that that we've got kind of a double-barreled possibility here in gold. You know, just the prospect, the rise in interest rates winds up being somewhat self-limiting, in that you get to a certain rate, whether it's 3.2 or 3.3 or 4% on the 10-year. Well, it's going to trigger a recession, which itself would change the downtrend that we've seen in bond prices. So so I think, you know, you really have to buy what nobody else wants. And right now that happens to be treasuries. The June T-bond futures are just about, they're probing a low that was made earlier this year in February at 141.14. And we've gotten very close to that. And I think long-term treasuries are near a bottom. And of course, we don't buy them for the yield. We buy them for the capital gain. And if you have a year where rates turn significantly lower, the corresponding rally well out the yield curve is going to give you gains in excess of 15 or 20% capital gains. So there's a lot of potential there. It's not, we don't buy bonds for the 3% interest they pay, but at this point, yeah, we might, because relative to stocks that have been very overpriced, bonds are a good, they're defensive here. And you just have to convince yourself to get off the bandwagon that's been enjoying phenomenal gains simply by being indexed to stock futures.
Yeah. So you're thinking that that even though interest rates are going higher, treasuries are the place to be?
Yes, I do. I think we're getting near a bottom there, and they are certainly a very unpopular investment right now, and that's one of the oldest rules in investing. You gotta buy things that no one else wants them.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So you think it's a disfavored asset class? So it's already been hit more than it should be?
I'm not quite sure. I would say that it's certainly been hit very hard. You know, the bonds have been in a, well, just a nasty downtrend for quite some time. As far as overcorrecting, I'm not quite sure I'd make that claim, but I would say, just so I can be really specific here, looking at a continuous chart of the weekly bonds, the June futures have traded, they've come down in two big legs. The first started at around 153 and change back in 2017, and right before Christmas in 2017. And we took an enormous leg down to 141.14. And the second leg began last April. Began this April. So it's a relatively recent development. Bonds have gotten hit so hard since the first week in April that we've come from this rally high of 147 and change down to, well, today's low, I believe, was 141. Yesterday's low was 141.17. The key price for me would be 141.32. So that's just a half a point beneath today's low. That's a spot where I would be looking for a potential a major turn. So even if not, I think you really have to start trading the stocks in your portfolio for long-term bonds, treasuries, and this is just the time to be doing it.
Now, you've been bullish on treasuries for quite a while, Rick, haven't you?
Well, very long-term. My forecast is kind of an outlier. I may be the low guy on this particular forecast, but I had projected 0.6 interest rates on the 30-year and close to zero on the 10-year. So that puts me kind of out there on the lunatic fringe, But yes, that implies that I'm very, very bullish on the bonds long term. By long term, I'm talking about over the next four to eight years, perhaps.
Which means rates are going down, is what you're telling me, because we're not really out of the recession. We never really have been out of the recession, have we?
Well, we did to the point where at a statistical level, you know, we were able to get stories, news stories every day about how the economy was going great guns. I never really believed it. You know, I thought, well, the stock market's going great guns and real estate is going great guns. But pretty much everyone I know with the business was working hard just to stay afloat, you know, especially in New Jersey, if you're paying property taxes here. Anyway, we finally did statistically emerge from the depths of 2007, 2008 of the great financial collapse. And in some statistical ways, it looks like a recovery. You know, it looks like every able-bodied man, woman, and child is working right now. But that's not the case. A lot of people left the labor force. A lot of people are unemployed at a lower level than they were before the 708 crash. We've eliminated a huge swath of middle managers. And here, you know, we're kind of working on the low end, eliminating the minimum wage workers with robots. And, you know, probably the most nonsensical issue, the one issue you can, that any conservative can argue with the liberal, where the liberal doesn't stand a chance, involves the minimum wage. You know, the evidence is overwhelming that the higher you raise that wage, the more entry level jobs you're going to destroy.
Oh, we know that. That's a proven fact.
And it has other consequences that were not appreciated even by people who are certainly not appreciated by people who voted for Bernie Sanders. In San Francisco, for instance, when they started putting wages up above the minimum wage for waitresses above 10 or 12 bucks an hour, the economic and quite natural result was that a huge number of restaurants closed down. That's happening everywhere where localities or states are trying to support a minimum wage that is well in excess of a natural wage. So you know, the whole minimum wage thing, it's so obvious that when you force McDonald's to pay $15 an hour ultimately to its workers, there's only one absolutely certain outcome, and that will be that McDonald's will find ways to run a McDonald's with fewer employees. And you know, the technology is always going to be right around the corner.
Guaranteed.
Some workflow engineer, you know, a systems analyst is going to figure out a way for McDonald's, a whole restaurant, to stay open with maybe one or two employees. That's where they're headed.
Hey, well,
it's a direct consequence of forcing the minimum wage above its natural level.
Well, you got to look, Rick, we've got Flippy the Burger Flipper, who could do 360 perfect burgers an hour, which is way, way more than anyone else can do. Any human being cannot flip 360 burgers an hour. And he makes them perfectly, and you know all the cliches. He doesn't take coffee breaks. He doesn't call in sick. He doesn't file discrimination and, you know, all this other stuff. He doesn't go postal, hopefully, unless they really do take over. All these things make Flippy the Burger Flipper the perfect employee, right?
Well, he's a good the flipper himself is a good, that's one of the first jobs to go. But, you know, with genius levels analysis working in the system analysis area, you're going to find better ways to change the coffee filters, to cook the fries. And over time, McDonald's will wring out every little bit of efficiency they can from an operational standpoint, or wring out all of the inefficiencies. And I really do think that it's not just McDonald's. You know, every time we go to a branch bank, We look at the tellers and we know what they know, which is that they're not long for this world. You know, and they're even on the real estate side of it, you've got a huge deflationary overhang. It's not like we haven't had enough trouble digesting the big box stores, which, as it happens, you know, we were wondering what would happen to all that mall space. It turns out a lot of it is being converted to residential, commercial, or mix of the two, and that's what's happening to malls. But on the Main Street side of things, you know, all these branch banks are just the baggage for B of A and Wells Fargo. They don't want a lot of branches and tellers. So that represents a huge overhang. We know that they're all going to be empty storefronts at some point, and it's going to be hard to find businesses to replace them. If you think that they're all going to be replaced by restaurants because baby boomers, millennials, and Gen Xers never cook, then you haven't been in the restaurant business. You know, it's a very, very difficult business to make money.
Oh, God, yeah. It's the worst business.
Especially if you're trying to operate independently. You know, you can only be a franchisee. And so all of these millions of buildings, well, let's say tens of thousands of buildings across the country that are serving as bank branches that will eventually close down, I'm hard pressed to imagine what they're going to become.
Yeah, it's a good question, but maybe there'll be immigrant processing centers where they can pick up their benefits. I don't know, or maybe Obamacare sign-up centers. I'm not sure about it. Anyway, Rick, we got to go now. Tell us site and how we subscribe to your newsletter.
Well, if you go to rickackerman.com, you'll find my website, Rick's Picks, rickackerman.com, and at the top of the home page there, you'll see a box that says get a 14-day free trial to Rick's Picks. Just click sign me up and you will be instantly transported, or you'll be able to get into the chat room for one right away. It's a great room. There are traders from all over the world who are in there round the clock, and they're a very helpful bunch. So it's a wonderful place to hang out if you'd like to trade and share real-time information with people who are very closely in tune with the markets. And you also have access to the full text of my daily touts, which are very often contain explicit actionable advice for getting in and out of certain widely traded popular stocks.
All right. Sounds pretty cool. So just go to rickackerman.com. And hey, while you're at it, send us an email. Like I said, we love for you to be part of the show. KL@KerryLutz.com. The Twitter feed's @KerryLutz. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. And Rick, we'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for inviting me on. Always a pleasure, Terry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.